Luke's thoughts should have been clear when the time came for the meeting with the Magister. But instead, they were an untidy tangle. Anakin killed the blood carver without a lightsaber. Before Zonama Sikat had vanished into the unknown regions, Anakin Skywalker must have come here, and he'd come with Obi-Wan Kenobi. What did it mean that the boy had killed a blood carver without using a lightsaber? That he had used the power of the dark side? His mind was still spinning with possibilities when Durak and Raul finally came to inform them all that it was time. Luke took a deep, calming breath and let himself be led with the others from the habitat. Night had fallen. The only light came from balls of bioluminescence balancing atop slender stalks. The lightstalk path wound through the trees for several hundred meters before culminating in a large bowl-shaped depression. There, gathered in a circle, a dozen Ferroans awaited them. Standing in the center of these was the black-robed figure of the Magister. When all was still, the Magister spoke. "Once again, the Jedi come to us. As always, you bring more questions than answers." "We are here to answer those questions," Luke said, wondering why the Magister looked different. Her presence in the Force was strong, but much more muted than it had been on the landing field. "There are some among the Council who would have me ask Sikat to send you away immediately. You come to us, by your own admission, as harbingers of doom."
"What do you mean?" Jason asked.
"Three times now we have had to defend ourselves," the Magister explained, "and each time Jedi were present."
"Magister," Luke said,
"if these attacks upon you are in any way connected to our being here, then I assure you it is unintentional on our part. The far outsiders arrived before us. We had no idea they would be here until we arrived. Their presence here is a mystery to us. Perhaps we can solve it together, if you allow us to."
"How would you have us do that?"
"We begin by talking. It is a long story, but perhaps in its telling you will come to see the truth of what I say, and the sincerity of our intentions." The Magister pondered this for a long moment. With a slight nod, she seemed to come to a decision.
"My name is Jabatha," she said. "We shall hear your story."
Luke took a deep breath and began. He started from the time the Yuuzhan Vong had first come to the attention of the New Republic on Belkadan, when Danny Kui had witnessed the launch of their invasion. He talked about the hundreds of billions of deaths across the galaxy, trying to capture in words how it felt to watch everything he had loved slip away. Not just the government he'd helped form from the ashes of the Empire, but also the principles on which it had been based.
"What does this have to do with Zonama Sikat?"
the Magister, Jabatha, asked when Luke had finished.
"That's what we're here to find out," Mara said.
"We are but one world with a small population," Jabatha said. "Our strength lies in defense, not offense."
"That may be so," Danny said. "But if we'd had your defenses at our disposal in the first place, we may have stood a better chance of repelling the Yuuzhan Vong at the borders of the galaxy."
The Magister's frown deepened.
"Your words make it sound as though Zonama Sikat is all-powerful. But this is not so. Although it did once manage to repel the Far Outsiders, it was not without suffering major damage to itself. The attack traumatized it greatly. Our defenses are not impenetrable."
"I understand," Luke said.
"We would not want to place Sikat in any more peril than it already faces. But you must be aware that you are in peril already. The Yuuzhan Vong have stumbled across Zonama Sikat twice now, on different sides of the galaxy. They are not so many that this could have happened by chance."
"And what would you have us do?"
the Magister asked Luke.
"You speak of their wish for genocide, and yet, do you not wish the same for them? Do you not wish them removed from the galaxy, as they wish you?"
"Absolutely not," Luke said.
"Then why have you come here? What possible help can we give you?"
"We must work together to find that out," Luke said.
Must? Jabitha echoed. We have suffered greatly to find peace. Why must we suffer again on behalf of those who do not have the fortitude to free themselves?
Because the living force requires it, Jason said.
Jabitha's eyes flashed at Jason.
What is that? You dare presume to speak for the Force?
Luke could feel the situation rapidly slipping from their control. In the hope of rekindling the welcome they had first received from the Magister, he decided to try another tack.
You say that you have been attacked 3 times, Luke said. We know of 2 instances, both perpetrated by the Yuuzhan Vong. Were they behind the 3rd too?
No, the Magister said. That force consisted of forces of the Republic, led by a commander, Tarkin.
And that was the same time the Jedi were last here? Luke asked.
After Vergere's visit?
Yes. Tell me about them, Luke said. Tell me about Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
They came looking for Vergere, Jabitha said eventually. The Force shone brightly in Anakin. He was, briefly, my friend. The words that Jason had told him about the Blood Carver once again echoed in Luke's mind.
There was a Blood Carver, he prompted. An assassin sent to kill Anakin,
Jabitha explained, nodding.
He used me to gain leverage over Anakin, and Anakin became very angry. He killed with the strength of his mind. Until that moment, we had not known that such things were possible.
They are possible, Luke said. Her gaze focused on him.
You are his son, aren't you? He is in you.
She faced Jason.
And you, too.
He was my grandfather, Jason said. Luke just nodded.
It is late, she said. If you will allow us, we will provide you with shelter for the night.
Tahiri rocked back on her heels as her mirror image abruptly spun around and confronted her.
It's here.
What is?
The shadow.
Tahiri looked around her, but could see nothing. She and Raina were momentarily united by their mutual fear of the thing that had come for them.
You could help me fight it,
Raina whispered close to her ear.
Stand and help me kill it.
Tahiri shook her head. She wasn't a warrior at heart.
We are bound together, you and I. This is a fate we must accept.
I accept nothing.
Don't you think I would give you the death you desire if I could?
Raina said.
But we are bound together. You must see that, and you must accept it.
Tahiri shook her head.
I can't. Then you leave me no choice.
Raina took 2 steps back and raised her lightsaber horizontally in front of her. Raina's blade flashed upward, spinning high into the blackness and casting a bright blue light across the surrounding ruins. As the blade came down again, Raina reached out to catch it. Tahiri could tell straight away that the Yuuzhan Vong girl had misjudged the descent, but she seemed incapable of calling out to warn her. She just stood mutely watching on as the bright blue blade slashed Raina's hand and then clattered to the floor. Then, from somewhere far away, almost smothered by a terrible blinding pain, Tahiri heard herself scream.
C-3PO cocked his golden head. You hear that? Han asked.
Of course, sir. The signal is quite clear.
The warbling transmission issued from the cockpit speakers with liquid clarity. If C-3PO couldn't translate it, no one could.
The transmission appears to be in a very strange form of trinary machine language.
Is it coming from the relay base? Han asked over his shoulder.
I don't think that's terribly likely, sir. Not unless it has taken to talking to itself.
There's more than one signal? Leia asked.
I have identified at least 17.
Leia thought of the strange flower-like formations the Falcon had passed through earlier, and an uneasy thought suddenly occurred to her. these transmissions, she said. What are they talking about exactly?
There seems to be a lot of talk about the battle. The atmospheric disturbances are severe in some areas, and it would appear that the local flora has suffered catastrophic damage.
Did you say flora? Han glanced at the forward viewport. Are you saying that the things making these signals are alive?
Why, yes, sir. I had assumed you already suspected this.
But how is that possible in an environment like this?
Life has been found before in atmospheres of similar constitution, sir.
But trinary code? I think someone taught them to speak that way, Leia said. Han's eyes narrowed thoughtfully. Someone on the relay team? Past, if not present. She turned to C-3PO. Do you think we could communicate with these creatures?
I can see no reason why not, Princess. I am fluent in an approximate version of their language.
He leaned forward to speak into the communicator. C-3PO warbled a series of strange fluting tones into Asfandia's dense atmosphere. When it was done, C-3PO straightened in satisfaction.
I have broadcast a request for information on the location of the Vergermer.
Verger what? Han said.
Vergermer. The relay base. If they reply, we will know that...
He paused as a stronger signal from the comm filled the cabin. C-3PO burbled out another string of nonsensical sounds. The reply was immediate, although this time it was as if multiple voices had joined the conversation. Are you getting anything useful? Han asked.
Indeed, sir. For the most part, the as they call themselves, are a sociable species, and are happy to talk. They are familiar with the relay base, but will not reveal its location until they are certain we mean it no harm.
C-3PO hesitated, looking to each person in the cockpit. What is it, 3PO? Leia asked.
Well, Princess, it seems that in the eyes of the we are murderers, and therefore untrustworthy.
Murderers? Han rasped.
They say that the voices of their friends were silenced when we crossed their paths.
With a sickening sensation, Leia thought again of the strange flower shapes that had brushed by the Falcon, dissolving in the freighter's turbulent, superheated wake. Stop the engines, she told her husband. Do it now before we kill someone else. Han complied. The Falcon settled slowly to the bottom of the trench, and when a quiet had washed over the ship, Leia explained her theory of what these aliens were. We didn't know, Han said, pale-faced at the idea of having inadvertently killed so many intelligent beings. Leia put a hand on her husband's shoulder, as out of the darkness, one of the flower shapes drifted toward them. Now that she could see it properly, she saw how its edges rippled to provide motion, moving it through the atmosphere. Leia felt a faint rippling through the Force, as a second alien joined the first. It was in turn quickly joined by a third. We killed their friends, she thought bitterly to herself. We killed their family. Somehow, she didn't think that Sari was about to make up for that. Jag took the shot on his port shields and stuttered his engines as though he'd been hit. His claw craft went into a wild tumble, careening dangerously across the battlefield. Everything depended on him being able to convince those that saw him that his death roll was genuine, while at the same time maintaining enough control over his ship to ensure he wasn't actually killed. A fraction of a second before colliding with the gunship, he fired his laser cannons. The resulting explosion boiled Yorick Coral in a great plume from the gunship, enveloping him in fire and debris. Inertial dampeners soaked up his residual momentum and brought him and his claw craft to a creaking halt deep within the hull of the ruined gunship. He clicked his communicator. His one click would tell them he'd survived. Thankfully, he immediately received two clicks in return, which meant that everything had gone according to plan on the outside, too. The Yuuzhan Vong had bought the illusion of his destruction. He searched the wreckage with radar and other instruments. As far as he could tell, it was empty of life, but not completely dead yet. The spine of the ship was still transmitting data, although the brain of the living craft was dead, and the various limbs it had once coordinated were disconnected. And in places, surviving off scraps of nutrients and energy sources circulating irregularly through the infrastructure, were five clusters of Dovin basals, the miniature black hole generators that the Yuuzhan Vong used for propulsion, defense, and attack. Jag fired up his engines again. The claw craft shifted in the wreckage, then settled as his shields got a better grip. Using the laser cannon as a surgeon would wield a vibroscalpel, he began to sculpt the interior of the gunship. By eating away at the gunship from the inside and letting the pieces tumble back into the wake, he could gradually increase the effect his clawcraft's engine was having. And that this inert wreck was suddenly accelerating across the skies of Asfandia wouldn't necessarily arouse the Yuuzhan Vong's suspicions either. In large space battles, active debris was a common and occasionally dangerous hazard.
Admiral, Twin One appears to be intending to ram that ruined gunship.
Hellion's gaze didn't shift from the display to look at the officer standing beside him.
I can see what he's doing, Commander. But sir, the Yuuzhan Vong have collision avoidance systems at least as good as ours. What could he possibly hope to achieve by doing this?
He hopes to surprise me, of course, and them in the process. Meanwhile, the disposition of the battle hadn't changed. The Yuuzhan Vong still outnumbered the Imperial and Galactic Alliance forces, and they were still amassing their forces in the northern flank.
Admiral, what is it?
I have a text message from Colonel Fell, sir, relayed through Twin 9.
What does he say?
He says, get ready. Pelion glanced at the displays showing the northern flank.
Any reply Pelion might have sent went untransmitted,
as, on the screen before them, the gutted gunship suddenly exploded.
Leia folded her arms and shivered, unable to take her eyes off the screen in which the alien C-3PO called had gathered. A strange new warbling came over the comm.
The say that there are many hot bodies on Asfandia now,
C-3PO translated.
They're doing what they can to protect their people, but without knowing where the next target will be, it's impossible to keep them all safe.
Leia could appreciate the problem all too well. There was only one possible solution, but she didn't particularly like it.
We can't stay down here indefinitely, Han pointed out.
But we can't go anywhere either, Droma said. Not while those aliens are out there.
He indicated the ring of flower-like aliens floating around the ship in mute appeal. The moment they engaged the Falcon's drives, they would be swept away like Geonosians in a hurricane.
I'm aware of all this, Leia said irritably. We have to send a message.
Han didn't look happy with her suggestion.
I don't think that's a good idea. If we do that, Leia, they'll spot us for sure.
That's partly the idea. Understanding dawned behind her husband's eyes.
Okay, but what about them?
He indicated the waiting aliens. How far can we extend the shields?
A fair distance, why?
Can we create a separate pocket?
Not without serious modifications.
But you could do it.
I guess.
Good. Han turned away to begin hitting switches. Droma was looking from Han to Leia with increasing puzzlement.
I don't suppose either of you would care to let me in on what's going on?
It's simple, Leia said. We're going to draw the Yuuzhan Vong here by sending a transmission. Droma's bushy gray eyebrows shot up.
Listen, Han said. We tell the Salonia to look for a convergence in our location, right? When the Yuuzhan Vong are all in one spot, they'll make the perfect target.
The big beam weapons on one of those Star Destroyers should be able to make quite a mess out of them.
Not to mention us, of course.
Not if they aim right, Leia said. We'll be cold, presenting as small a target as possible.
What about the locals?
Hopefully, they'll be tucked nice and safe under our shields, Han said.
Leia turned away from the two and faced C-3PO. "3PO, advise the..." She stopped, unable to get her tongue around the pronunciation of the alien's name. "Just tell them that they should come as close as possible to the Falcon, and that they're to stay there until we tell them otherwise." C-3PO relayed the message in burbling sing-song tones.
"They will do as you instruct," he said eventually. "Although, they ask us to be particularly careful of the nesting planes nearby."
"What does it look like?" Leia asked.
"It consists of a series of caves and tunnels beneath the surface, in which the female lay their eggs for the males to fertilize."
"Tell them we'll be as careful as possible," Leia said. "That's the best we can do." Saba's eyes snapped open. She sat bolt upright, heart racing and scales shifting in anticipation. She sighed heavily to herself and looked idly about the dark room. It was still nighttime and everyone was asleep. With her senses tingling, she threw back her blanket and made a stand. Halfway to her feet, however, something heavy and suffocating dropped down on her from above and pushed her back to the ground. She roared to wake the others. Her lightsaber flared into life beneath the confines of whatever it was that was holding her down. She slashed once, twice, and felt the weight fall away.
"Saba!"
The voice belonged to Soren Hegarty, and from the doctor's tone, Saba knew she was in trouble. She turned to where Hegarty struggled with three black-clad Ferroans. Hegarty, her cries now muffled, was being dragged rapidly away. Saba took off at a run, her tail pointing behind her in an arrow straight counterbalance to the lightsaber in her hand. One of the kidnappers tripped just as Saba reached them. The one who'd fallen scrambled backward through the mud, while the others turned to face her. There was fear in their eyes, but they held their ground. Two held heavy clubs, like the one that had almost knocked her out before. The third pointed something at her that looked like a thin, twisted tree root, with a startlingly acute crystal point at its tip. Before she had time to wonder at its purpose, a miniature bolt of lightning arced toward her. It grounded safely in her lightsaber, which she'd swung to intercept it with liquid ease. The one with the tree root weapon lowered his aim, while the one on the ground scrabbled for purchase in the mud. The third kidnapper, the one actually holding the doctor, unceremoniously dropped his hostage. Then all three were gone, running in different directions into the shadows. Saba reached down with one clawed hand to help the doctor to her feet.
"We must get back to the others," she said, hurriedly leading the way.
They returned to find Luke and Mara arguing with a group of Ferroans who had come out to see what all the commotion was about.
"Are you suggesting we would sanction such behavior?" Rao protested.
"All I know is that we were attacked," Mara said, "and I want them found."
"In this rain?" Rao said. "You'll never find them now."
"We have to try," Jason said.
To Master Skywalker and Mara, he said, "She's gone."
"Who is gone?" Durak asked.
"Dani Quee," Saba said. "They took Dani."
Jason looked at her and nodded. "And I intend to find her before they get too far."
"Jason, wait!" Mara tried to catch her nephew's shoulder as he started off into the darkness. But he shrugged her hand aside and continued on his way without further comment.
"This one will keep him safe,"
Saba reassured Mara.
With a two-legged leap, she took after Jason, hunting the moment. Pelion's aide gasped as the decoy gunship blew up with Jag Fel inside it. The destroyed gunship had broken into several large chunks, with numerous smaller fragments boiling into vacuum. Two of the larger chunks were heading for the cruiser. Another, the largest, was tumbling toward the Corvette. A gout of plasma fire lashed out at the first of the fragments to approach the cruiser. Instead of blowing the wreckage into even smaller fragments, however,
The vicious bolt of plasma was sucked away into nothing.
What?
Pelion stared at the screen in disbelief. Only as the Corvette began firing on the piece tumbling toward it, did he finally realize it. The plasma fire was being absorbed by Dovin Basals, lingering on the fragments of the gunship's hull.
All fighters in the northern flank, he ordered his aide. Concentrate on those two targets. Divert all firepower to the weak spots.
Jag rode the wild tumbling of the third fragment as it arrowed toward the Yuuzhan Vong Corvette, hanging alongside the damaged cruiser. Just before the collision, Jag made sure the fragment was between him and the Corvette. Nevertheless, the impact was intense enough to almost buckle his shields. Repeating the tactic he'd employed in the gunship, he fired his way out of the impact point, tunneling deep into the heart of the Corvette. He didn't know how far he would get before his shields overloaded, but he was determined to do as much damage as he could before then. He kept on firing until his laser cannons threatened to melt and his shields were on the verge of collapse. Gunning his engines and keeping a close eye on the instruments, he powered his way back through the burning ship. As he neared the outer hull, he picked up speed. The faster he came out, the better. White heat faded to blue, streaked with yellow, then orange, and finally, red. Then, abruptly, there was nothing ahead of him but stars. He put his shields to maximum behind him and pushed the throttle as far as it would go. Until he was certain he had his clawcraft under control, he didn't have time to look around. When he did, he was amazed to find that his plan appeared to have worked. The Corvette was in serious trouble, burning in too many places to count, and looking like it could break up at any moment.
Congratulations on a job well done, Colonel Fell.
The voice of the Grand Admiral from the comm broke across his thoughts.
Consider me surprised.
Jag checked in with Captain Maine, who ordered him back in no uncertain terms. There was a heavy strain in her voice, as though she was deeply worried about something.
We haven't heard from the Falcon,
she explained when he asked.
A garbled transmission came through a short time ago, but we couldn't decipher it.
That's not good, Jag said. Captain, is Jaina there? There was a long pause.
It might be easier to talk about that when you dock.
Is something wrong?
She's unconscious. Possibly in a coma, Danto says. We don't know exactly when it happened, and we don't know when she's likely to snap out of it, if she snaps out of it at all. I'm sorry, Colonel. I wish I could offer you better news, but the fact is, we just can't reach her.
Wet leaves slapped at Jason's face as he ran through the Tampasi. He could sense Danny somewhere up ahead, but the reading was vague and distorted, as though something was interfering with the force. His pace quickened, feet splashing noisily on the wet ground. He could sense the kidnappers now, also. Five in all, each with a certain calm to their thoughts. Yes, thought Jason, reaching out farther into the force. There they were now. The two groups were coming together in a clearing up ahead, greeting one another with laughter and congratulatory handshakes, none of them exhibiting the slightest hint of fear or concern. Removing his lightsaber from his belt, he increased his pace even more. Using the fallen trunk of a boras as a springboard, Jason leapt into the small clearing where the kidnappers were gathered, somersaulting in the air as he went and igniting his lightsaber at the same time. When his feet touched the ground, he was already in a defensive stance, ready to deflect the three bolts of energy that spat from the tips of the kidnappers' lightning rods, harmlessly into the ground. The kidnappers froze, and an uneasy silence fell over the clearing.
We're prepared to fight, one of the kidnappers said, stepping forward. The weapon in his hand trembled uneasily.
You can't win, another said, with marginally more confidence. It's 15 against 1.
Jason was about to lower his weapon and try another tack when an ear-piercing roar broke the rainy quiet. A dark shape leapt out of the trees, as Jason had, and dropped heavily into the clearing. Saba's lightsaber sliced through the air, turning the rain to steam with a menacing hiss.
15 against 2, she snarled.
Half the kidnappers fled in panic at the sight of the mighty barrel, not even attempting to put up a fight. 7 remained, all clustered around the stretcher, putting themselves between Jason and Saba and their hostage.
Wait! Jason called out over the rain. Please, just lower your weapons!
Heads turned to him as he deactivated his lightsaber and returned it to his belt.
Do you really want to die here tonight? He asked the Faroans. You're the ones outnumbered, Jedi! One of the kidnappers spat.
Jason stepped forward, one hand upraised, keen to stay any violent acts they might intend.
Perhaps if you told us why you're doing this, we might be able to work things out without violence.
I don't trust them,
said another of the Faroans, a woman with black hair and round features.
There's no reason to be frightened of us, Jason said. And we're here by Seacott's invitation.
Then Seacott is wrong, the first man said. As Senshi says, it's... Quiet!
Snapped one of the kidnappers at the back. You came looking for hostages, Jason said, and you're returning with one. But 3 would be better, don't you think?
What are you saying? The woman asked, frowning.
I'm saying that we don't need to fight. He indicated Saba, who still had her lightsaber raised and at the ready. Saba and I will accompany you as prisoners, so that we can talk this out properly with Senshi.
I still don't trust them, the woman said.
If you fight, you'll lose, Jason said simply, and possibly even die. You know it makes sense. The man nodded slowly. It does make sense. The woman at the front turned on him, the look on her face one of perplexity and anger.
Have you gone mad, Tauru? We can't take them to Senshi. They'll kill him for sure.
Nobody's going to kill anyone, Jason assured her. Here, look. He unclipped the lightsaber from his belt and tossed it to her. Jason nodded at Saba, who, after an initial hesitation, deactivated her blade and tossed it to the man Jason had disarmed.
Very well, Tauru said.
He gestured and the group broke apart.
Pick up the stretcher, Tauru ordered his 2 new captives. You'll carry your friend. That way, you won't be in any position to try anything.
Tahiri's scream was like a cold knife to Jaina's heart. She felt the darkness flex around her. Then, an image came to her of Raina crouched before Tahiri, blood dripping in a steady stream from a wound in her hand. Tahiri dropped too, clutching her own arm. Jaina was confused for a long moment as to what had happened. Realization flashed like lightning in her mind. Tahiri and Raina were mirror images, fighting each other to the death. What one did to the other, they did to themselves. If Tahiri defeated Raina, then she would defeat herself in the process. Neither could win. Jaina tensed, unsure what she could do. As though from a great distance, she thought she heard Jag's voice calling to her.
I love you, Jaina,
the voice whispered over the darkened landscape. Please come back to me.
Leia held on as the shockwave from another near miss rattled the Falcon's bulkheads. Out in the corridor, she heard the clattering sounds of C-3PO falling over, followed by another plaintive cry. Han furiously punched controls with one hand while clinging onto the console with the other.
Doomed, I tell you!
Droma entered the cockpit.
I'm with the droid on this. The only thing in our favor right now is that the Vong don't know our exact whereabouts. But if they keep shelling the area like this...
Your concerns have been duly noted, Han said.
3PO,
How are our hangers-on out there?
They're a lot more fragile than we are.
The droid waddled into the cockpit and proceeded to warble a message to the huddled in the Falcon's protective shield. In the aft screen, they could be seen clustered together, the edges of their flower-like bodies all touching to form one large quivering mass.
The assure me that they are managing well enough, but they fear, as I and Master Droma do, that it will only be a matter of time before destruction befalls us.
I think the time has come to move, Droma said bluntly. We can't move, Han said. We'll melt our guests. They're going to be melted anyway when those shields fail. And then we'll all die. Can we use repulsors? Droma asked.
We might get a kilometer or two, Han replied. But we'll still be in the blast range.
Excuse me,
C-3PO interrupted.
I think the may have the solution to our problem.
Han turned in his seat.
They do?
Yes, sir. The suggest that we take shelter in their nearby nesting area. It is underground and easily large enough to fit our vessel, or so they say.
Why are they suggesting this now?
It would appear that we have earned their trust.
Leia nodded at C-3PO. Let's do it.
They will move to the front and guide us.
Han nodded as the wafting aliens propelled themselves to the front of the Falcon's missile tubes. Han fired up the repulsors and lifted the ship from Esfandia's surface. As the freighter turned to starboard, the line of straightened. Han took them gently through the murk, around a knobby protuberance that bulged out of the ground and vanished high above them, like a mountain.
Is it much farther? Han asked.
We should be there at any moment.
I don't like the look of this, Han muttered. They're sweeping the area at close range.
Excuse me, sir, but the are changing direction.
C-3PO pointed at the line of aliens guiding them across Esfandia, which was now angling down instead of forward. A red light began to flash on the scanners.
Ask them what we're supposed to do, will you, 3PO?
Han guided the Falcon down as far as he could go. A wall of gray dirt and rounded pebbles confronted them. Further warbling was exchanged between C-3PO and the aliens, as the droid tried to impress upon the urgency of the situation.
Hurry it up, 3PO, Han said, clenching his jaw as he flicked switches. I'm warming up the weapon systems and the engines.
Han, wait, Leia started. She stopped in mid-sentence. The ground ahead of them opened up like a giant fanged maw, spreading wide to swallow the Falcon whole. Leia had time only to gasp in horror at what looked like a thousand yellow eyes gleaming at her from the blackness within. Then the mouth came down upon them, and they were engulfed.
Tahiri struggled to think through a haze of tears. The voice of the shadow, the thing that had come to her, made her mind quake with fear.
What am I doing? She asked herself.
Whatever it is, Raina said, it has to be better than fighting yourself.
You're not me.
And you're not me, but a part. We're not anyone at all.
I don't...
She stopped, afraid that to utter the words meant admitting defeat.
I don't want to lose who I am.
Raina's expression changed to one of anger, an anger that Tahiri felt course through her own body.
Neither do I.
A cool breeze blew in from the dark, touching the moisture on Tahiri's cheeks.
I'm scared, she admitted quietly. This world scares me.
This world is all I've known since Yavin 4, Raina said.
Tahiri looked at her then, understanding the simple truth of her situation for the first time. This isn't a dream, is it?
I'm as real as the shadow creature we're fighting.
Tahiri trembled at the notion.
Tahiri, we're stuck with each other. We either live together, or we die together.
there is no in-between. Your hand is proof of that. Cut me, and you bleed. Kill me, and you die.
So what are we? Tahiri asked. Yuuzhan Vong? Jedi?
We're both, Raina said. And we are neither. We need to merge, Tahiri, and become one.
But who will I be?
You'll be someone new, Raina said. You'll be someone strong.
The time for thinking was over. Tahiri saw the thing that had come for her and Raina with startling clarity. It wasn't a god from the bowels of an alien mind. It wasn't the dark side. It wasn't her guilt or her despair. It was Jaina. Tahiri turned to face her mirror image one last time. Raina stepped closer, her injured hand outstretched.
Join me now. Together we will do what we need to do to be free.
Yes, Tahiri said slowly. I think I understand now.
So let's not think. Let's just do it.
Shakily, Tahiri reached out and took Raina's hand. Together, they faced the darkness.
If we don't start getting some answers soon, Mara said hotly, I'm going to start giving you people reasons to be afraid of the Jedi.
I'm telling you the truth, returned the Faroan woman called Darak. We don't know who's responsible for this attack.
Perhaps Seacott could help us, Luke said. Is it possible to ask it if it knows of their whereabouts? The Faroans exchanged glances.
Seacott has been regenerating after the attack of the Far Outsiders, Darak said.
Mara pressed. What about the Magister?
She is resting.
Please wake her for us, Luke said. After all, I'm sure she would want to be informed about a development as important as this, don't you? The Faroans exchanged another glance. Then Darak hurried off to do as the Jedi asked.
You are mistaken to believe that Seacott is aware of all things taking place on its surface, Raoul said. It is no more capable of this than you would be of tracking every cell in your body.
It seemed to find us easily enough when we arrived, Mara said.
Out in space it is different. A grain of sand is immediately noticeable if it gets in your eye. But that same grain of sand would be almost impossible to find on a beach.
A sudden feeling came through the Force. Luke closed his eyes in order to focus on it. Mara touched his arm.
You feel it too?
He opened his eyes, nodding.
It's Jason. I think he's safe for the moment.
Are they on their way back?
Hegarty asked.
I'm not sure, Luke said.
I don't think so. Raoul opened his mouth to say something, but was cut off by the sudden return of Darak. Her expression was one of profound alarm.
She's gone, she exclaimed.
Who? Mara said. Who's gone?
The Magister. She's been taken from her rooms.
What do you mean, taken? Raoul asked, aghast. Why would anybody do that?
I think I know, Luke said. The kidnap of Dany was just a distraction. She wasn't who the kidnappers were after. It was Jabatha.
Jag reached Tahiri's room in record time. There he found Pride of Salonia's chief medic, Dantos Vigos, and Selwyn Markota, Captain Main's second in command. On the bed beside Tahiri was Jaina, her outstretched form dressed in the clothes she usually wore about the ship. Her eyes were shut, her face expressionless, and her breathing was fast and shallow.
What happened?
That's the problem, Vigo said.
We don't know what's going on. We found Jaina unconscious shortly after arriving around Isfandia. She was slumped beside Tahiri, having collapsed onto the bed. We've scanned them both and found no signs of physical abnormalities, but their minds are furiously active.
Jag faced the medic with a frown.
How do you account for this?
Vigo sighed wearily.
Okay, but it's only a theory based on what I've been told of Tahiri's background and recent behavior. She has a split personality that is fighting for dominance over the body. But what does this have to do with Jaina?
I think they've melded, Vigo said. Jaina's helping Tahiri survive.
So why won't she respond? Jag asked. If she's in there voluntarily, why doesn't she just wake up and tell us what's going on?
It's impossible for me to say for sure, Vigus admitted. I'm sorry.
I'll talk to her, Jag said. If she is in there, she'll be able to hear me.
Colonel, we've tried.
Just leave me alone with her, okay? Jag interrupted.
Markota hesitated, then nodded to the medic.
We've got nothing to lose.
When they were gone and the door had shut behind them, Jag took her hand in both of his.
I'm here, he whispered close into her ear.
He squeezed her hand between his.
I love you, Jaina, he said.
The word came easily for him.
Please come back to me.
Saba kept all her senses alert as she matched her pace to that of the Faroan kidnappers. The path they'd been following had run out half an hour earlier, and they were now moving through unbeaten wilds of the Tempasi. Finally, they came to a cliff face that was hidden from view by a stand of enormous boras. At the base of the cliff was an overhang 5 meters high and stretching a dozen meters into the rock. Jason and Saba were directed under its shelter, where a larger group of Faroans waited. They gathered around the new arrivals as they entered the shaded sandy area, parting only to admit a very old Faroan male to the front. His gaze flickered across Saba, Jason, and the comatose Danny.
I ask for one of the visitors as a hostage, and you bring me the entire group. What is the meaning of this?
A look of confusion passed over Tauru's face.
Three seemed better than one, Senshi.
You fool, the old man said. The outsiders have ways about them, ways to make their words seem reasonable.
At that moment, another group of Faroans stumbled in from the rain, bearing another body on a stretcher, covered from head to foot with a tarpaulin. Saba's first thought was that the kidnappers had returned for Soren Hegarty and somehow snatched the elderly woman from the care of Master Skywalker and Mara. But when the new arrivals set down the stretcher and pulled back the tarp, Saba's concern quickly changed to puzzlement. It wasn't Hegarty at all. It was the Magister. Senshi stared down at the unconscious figure, smiling thinly.
Now they won't be able to ignore us.
There was a murmur from the Faroan standing around him. Jason stepped forward.
Why would you do this? Why take the Magister?
Because she has forgotten, he sneered. She has forgotten the pain and suffering we endured the last time strangers came here after years of searching. The fires and the groundquakes, the terrible losses as whole villages fell, the hurricanes that tore entire Boras out by their roots, the smoke that covered the sky.
You remember the time before the crossings? Jason asked.
As clearly as if it were yesterday, Senshi said,
his expression haunted.
I lost my children, my partner, my parents, and my brother and sister. And I lost too many friends to even count. I was alone, wishing that I had died with them. I will not let the Magister plunge us into another cycle of death and destruction.
So what happens now? Jason asked. What do you hope to achieve by all this?
We have achieved as much as we dared dream, Senshi replied. We've shown that we cannot be easily ignored. When the Magister wakes, she will have no choice but to listen to us.
But by turning your backs on us, Jason said, you risk a much greater disaster.
Such as?
such as the domination of the galaxy by a power more destructive than you could possibly imagine. Who will you call upon for help when everyone else in the galaxy is gone?
You will never convince me that we need your help.
Thankfully, it's not you we need to convince, Jason replied. It's Seacott.
Tahiri trembled as she felt the shadow of Jaina lost in the prison of her mind.
It's time, Tahiri said. I'm tired of being lost.
The ragged edges of their wounds sought each other and sealed as though it had never existed. Tahiri gasped at the unsettling sensation and heard Reina do the same. She watched with alarm as their entwined fingers melted into each other, as though their skin had wrapped around both hands, binding them together. Then the two of them stared as the lumpy knot of flesh that was their combined hands began to spread along their arms.
There's still time to change your mind,
Reina cried as she struggled.
We don't have to do this.
You're wrong, Tahiri said.
We do have to do this. It's the only way.
The knot reached their elbows, and Tahiri felt her hands sliding under the skin to Reina's shoulder. Tahiri met Reina's wide-eyed stare.
We must embrace, she told her Yuuzhan Vong counterpart. Our cultures, our beliefs, our knowledge.
Some of the fear ebbed from Reina's gaze then.
We must embrace, she concurred. Our emotions, our lives, ourselves.
Tahiri took a deep breath as the knot of skin reached their heads and slowly pulled them together so that their noses were almost touching.
The good and the bad,
Reina said, her lips brushing lightly against Tahiri's own.
The light and the dark, Tahiri said. We must embrace.
It's a trap!
Droma's cry of alarm was echoed by C-3PO, who threw himself backward as the floor tipped beneath them and Millennium Falcon was sucked down into the gaping maw. Leia hung on desperately while Han struggled to reach the controls in front of him. But there was something about the unfolding space ahead of them that caught Leia's eye.
Look!
All eyes in the cockpit turned to the display, just as the maw fell shut around them. The Falcon seemed to be surrounded by numerous vertical columns, like teeth in an enormous mouth. See those columns? Leia said, pointing at the display. They're legs. And as for the eyes... Han chuckled before she could finish what she'd been about to say.
Portholes, right? The relay base?
Droma sounded as though he could hardly believe his eyes, or his luck.
It was here all along, Han said.
Perhaps not. Leia watched as a slender wire snaked out of the gloom and attached itself to the hull of the battered freighter.
This is Commander Ashpadar of Esfandia Long Range Communications Base,
came an emotionless female voice from the comm. Leia identified its speaker as a Godel, which seemed appropriate.
I'm sorry we took so long getting here. We were sheltering in some nesting plane several dozen kilometers from here when word arrived. We came as soon as we could.
Pelion stood on the bridge of Right to Rule, savoring the silence, but in no way relaxed by it. The withdrawal of the Yuuzhan Vong to a geosynchronous orbit high above the western hemisphere of Esfandia was fortunately timed, allowing exhausted Imperial pilots to return to their base ships and restock. But it was only a temporary reprieve, prompted by Jagfell's superb disruption of the northern flank.
"Excuse me, sir," said Pelion's aide, standing patiently to attention behind him. "I have the information you requested."
"Go on," Pelion said without turning.
"Close analysis of telemetry reveals at least two surface landings during the battle," she said. One was almost certainly Millennium Falcon.
I should have known that's where they'd go. And the other?
A Yorick Trima landing craft. Pelion faced the aide.
Do we know where it put down?
We have an approximate region, 100 kilometers across. But it is possible that it has since moved under the cover of the atmosphere.
So we've lost it?
Yes, sir.
And Millennium Falcon?
The same.
Get me Captain Main of Pride of Salonia, Pelion ordered.
Right away, sir.
Seconds later, her hologram was visible before him.
Grand Admiral, how may I help?
We've noted the presence of the Millennium Falcon on the surface of Asfandia. What is the nature of her mission there?
They are attempting to assist the crew of the relay base.
Have you heard from them since?
There was a garbled transmission from the region most recently targeted by the Yuuzhan Vong, but it was jammed. We suspect it was from the Millennium Falcon, advising us of their intentions, but the content of the message and its source is unknown.
Commander Vorik has sent a landing party after them, Pelion said. We believe they're both looking for the same thing, possibly in the area most recently under fire. Do you have any plans for a recovery operation?
None at the moment, she admitted.
Is it possible to advise me in advance of any such operation being put into effect?
We will advise you of our intentions,
she said evenly.
Jason lifted himself out of a recuperative trance at the same time that Saba beside him stirred. He'd been lending his strength to Danny, who was still out cold, while Saba had been exploring the life fields of the planet in an attempt to ascertain exactly where they were concentrated. What had roused them from their meditations was the sound of the Magister's voice resounding through the cave.
"Tell Senshi I wish to speak with him," she said evenly.
Her supine body was still bound and blindfolded, yet she commanded authority. One of the Faroans who had been assigned to watch over the prisoners hurried off to find Senshi. Senshi soon came and crouched down beside the Magister's body. He reached down and removed the blindfold.
"You brought outsiders here. You've put us all in danger, Jabatha."
"If I have, then it's at Seacott's behest. It recognizes the Jedi. It is curious about their kind."
"We recognize them too," he said. "But that doesn't automatically make them our friends. You recognize the far outsiders. Would you invite them here too?"
"You know as well as I do that the far outsiders would not be welcome here. They don't participate in the endless flow of life, as Jedi do."
"Seacott is not happy, Jabatha."
"How could you possibly know this? I am the Magister. I am the interface. This method has served us well for decades. Why do you question it now? How have I changed to suddenly become untrustworthy?"
"You haven't changed, Jabatha. The times have. And we must change with them."
"I agree," Jason said, gently easing into the debate. "That's exactly why we're here. We want Seacott to leave its place of sanctuary, to abandon the security it's found in Klaas Ephemera system, and rejoin the rest of the galaxy. A galaxy that is at war with the far outsiders. If you join us, you'll be risking your lives. But if you don't join us, and we lose without you, there'll no longer be anything to stand between you and the far outsiders." The skepticism emanating from Senshi was so intense, it was almost tangible.
"And you've agreed to this?" he asked Jabatha. "You've set us on this path to destruction?"
"I've done no such thing," she snapped back. Senshi's expression was scornful.
"You are gambling on your feelings when all our lives, as well as the life of Seacott itself, are at stake."
He shook his head firmly.
"I can't allow you to do this, Jabatha."
The Magister's expression hardened. "And what will you do if I refuse to stand down? Kill me? Kill the Jedi?"
That is not an option,
Saba hissed, standing. Senshi glanced at the barrable.
We're moving out in 5 minutes. Blindfold the Magister. I don't want her to see where we're going.
What about the Jedi? Jabatha asked. Senshi met Jason's stare.
If they wish to come with us, then let them. But they can leave if they wish to. Even if they return straight to the settlement, they won't get back in time to bring help, and we have no need for additional prisoners.
Trust me, Saba said.
With hands outstretched and a simple tug of the Force, the two lightsaber pommels flew from the belt of the Faroan looking after them back into her hands.
We were never your prisoners.
Jack felt Jaina's hand move within his. He jerked out of an exhausted half-sleep and leaned over her. Her eyelids were half-opened, and the fingers of her hand clutched his.
Jaina, can you hear me?
Jack!
Her voice was ragged. She started to say something else, but was interrupted by a low moan from the bed next to hers. Jack's relief was muted by the realization that Tahiri was waking too. He reached across Jaina to call Salonia's chief medic.
Vigos, I think you'd better get down here.
The medic didn't ask for explanations or waste time replying. With a click to indicate that he'd heard the message, the line went dead. Jag handed Jaina a cup of water with a straw feeder and let her drink, all the while uneasily watching the blonde girl stirring on the bed beside her. Who was waking up? Tahiri or Raina? Jaina must have seen the apprehension in his stare.
It's going to be all right, she croaked. I think.
Before he could ask her what she meant by this, Dantos, Vigos, and a full medical team burst into the room. Tahiri moaned again, and suddenly jackknifed on the bed, limbs flailing. Vigos and his team surrounded her instantly, gently restraining her while taking readings.
I heard you, Jaina whispered. In my dream, I heard your voice. I heard what you said.
Tahiri?
Vigo spoke close to the girl's face.
My name...
The girl's dry lips cracked open and emitted a voice like a desert wind.
What's my name?
Jag's stomach went cold.
Call Captain Main, he instructed Vigos.
Tell her...
A hand gripped his forearm, and he looked down in surprise to find Jaina restraining him.
Wait, she said.
Not just Tahiri,
the girl beside them croaked, her voice slowly firming.
I'm not just Raina either. I'm someone new.
The girl's eyes bored into his with startling clarity.
I've changed, but my face has not.
Luke listened to the news from the Boros network with a feeling of foreboding. Senshi's made no attempt to talk to anyone, he said, when the latest reports came to an end. But he's up to something. They were seated on the upper floor of one of the mushroom-shaped habitats.
It would help if we knew where they were going, at least, Mara said.
We are narrowing down the possibilities, Dirac said. It's not easy. The Tampasi is very dense in that region, and the trail isn't marked. But I believe I can guess at his destination.
Mara looked up hopefully.
Where?
To the northeast of here lies a stand of rogue Boros.
Rogue?
Mara frowned.
How?
Boros can be very dangerous and territorial when allowed to grow wild,
Dirac explained. Luke's comlink buzzed, and he answered it. The voice at the other end belonged to Captain Yage.
Master Skywalker, telemetry is picking up gravitation readings on the third moon of Mobis.
Source?
Unknown. But M3 is little more than a rock. There can't be anything big enough down there to generate gravity waves.
It could be a damaged coral skipper, Luke said.
Or one that's working just fine, Mara added.
That was my thought. We'd like to send a couple of ties to investigate.
I'll get back to you on that, Arian, Luke said, and clicked off the comlink. Before he could speak, Dirac was shaking her head.
We will not permit what you are about to ask.
Luke sighed, fighting to keep his tone even and reasonable when he spoke. All it would take is one ship to escape from here, and your sanctuary will be shattered. Perhaps.
Dirac still wasn't convinced.
We shall check our own observations. If there really are gravity waves coming from that moon, we will detect them and take action for ourselves.
Luke nodded. That sounds reasonable. But don't take too long, Mara said, as the Faroan woman exited the room.
Seacott will protect you, Raoul assured.
And who will protect Seacott?
Mara's words were steeped in annoyance and frustration, although beneath them, Luke sensed a genuine sympathy for the Faroans.
You know little about Seacott, the Faroan said.
Which is why we're here, Luke said. We want to know because Seacott is at the core of our solution.
With that knowledge, perhaps we can find peace in a way that won't involve the death of trillions.